News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
The eyes of the world were on St. Peter's Square this weekend for the funeral mass of Pope Francis. Now a 9-day period of mourning begins, after which the conclave to elect his successor will take place. We're joined by Vatican correspondent for EWTN, Colm Flynn. Colm, a 9-day period of mourning. What happens during this period?
Shane, a very good morning from Rome. And really, this is a period to let the dust settle on the papacy and the legacy of Pope Francis. It's a bit of breathing space between that and then the kind of gears shifting and kicking in for the conclave, so that as soon as Pope Francis has been buried, you know, the following day or the day after, we're not all of a sudden just trying to pick his successor. But of course, as you can imagine, the cardinals here in Rome have gathered already. They gathered even before the funeral. And although they haven't started the conclave, they've started their preliminary discussions where they're talking about maybe some of the themes and issues that they want to come up and shape this conclave. And it's fascinating to see, Shane, here in Rome at the moment. Every time you see someone go by with a red hat, a cardinal, they are flanked by the media. There are people chasing them because of the movie Conclave, because of the other movie, The Two Popes, because of the Netflix series Vatican Girl. There is such a huge interest in this papacy now, and as well the kind of politics of it all.
I was going to ask you, Colm, I actually watched the conclave over the weekend. I'm sure a lot of people are watching it because of what's going on at the moment. Maybe I'm wrong. Is there as much kind of politics and intrigue and side plotting and meetings in corridors as in reality as there was in the film?
Yeah, you know, of course, look, Catholics believe that it is the Holy Spirit who guides these men when they go in and into the Sistine Chapel, the door is locked and they vote in secrecy. But of course, they're human beings. They're people who have different priorities coming from different parts of the world, different agendas. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But, you know, you've got cardinals coming from Mongolia who want to push an agenda for their people and the priorities for the church over there. You have someone coming from Germany who might want a more progressive church. An African cardinal who's saying, well, look, we can't let the Europeans take over this conclave and push their agenda. We need roads and schools and family traditions. They need to be the priority. So they do start to talk to each other and say, look, how can we group together and kind of make sure that these are the forth-running issues in the conclave? And then from those issues will come the candidates, because it's a bit like politics. You know, politicians will run on issues, they will run on their policies. The cardinals, too, when they stand in front of their brother cardinals, they make pre-conclave speeches. So they would never advocate for themselves. They would never mention, oh, I think we should all vote for this cardinal. But they would talk about, well, here's the direction I think we should bring the church in the future. Here's where I think we should go. We should have Pope Francis 2.0 continue his legacy and the things that he was trying to reform or change. Or someone might say, look, we need something completely different.
Lots of names being mentioned. The one, I suppose, the front runner, and I know the old cliche is about the front runner never actually emerging as the Pope, but a lot of focus on Cardinal Pietro Parolin.
Yeah, it's interesting because they do say here that if you go into the conclave a Pope, you come back out again as a humble cardinal. And, you know, we have to be conscious that those who really know aren't talking and those who are talking don't know. And I don't want to fall into the latter category. But here's what I'll tell you. If you are a betting person and, you know, you were going to put some money on this, the odds would favor him. He is, I've interviewed him a couple of times here in Rome and in places like Dubai. He wouldn't have the charisma of Pope Francis, but he certainly has the experience. He knows the institution of the Catholic Church extremely well. He's Italian. He is the Vatican's top diplomat. So actually, whenever you see on the news, you know, Pope Francis held a private meeting with Donald Trump today, they'll often say, and then afterwards he had a follow-up meeting with, and that name is Pietro Parolin. So he's very well liked, very well respected around the world. And I think after Pope Francis, you know, it was a very, not rocky papacy, but we have to remember that while in certain parts of the world people adored Pope Francis, in other huge places like, you know, the continent of Africa, Asia, they looked on in dismay at some of the things that he pushed, some of the things he put an emphasis on. So it was seen as a pretty divisive time in the church. And someone like Parolin could be seen as someone to steady the ship a bit and just bring about a bit of stability.
Is it possible we will finally see a Pope that, you know, isn't Eurocentric, somebody from Africa or from Asia? Is that a possibility?
Yes, well, that was the break with Pope Francis, being from Latin America, being from Argentina.
He would still be seen as someone from a, you know, albeit a, obviously from Argentina, but from a sort of a Eurocentric kind of viewpoint, perhaps.
Well, I think this time round, I don't think we will see an African pope. I think the closest we might get to it is Luis Antonio Tagle from the Philippines. He would be the first Asian pope. There are a lot of Filipinos here in Rome at the moment. I was interviewing some of them yesterday for the BBC. And, I mean, for them, it would be such a huge moment to have him from Manila. He was the hot favorite a few years ago. He was really in favor with Pope Francis. For whatever reason, that seems to have changed. But when you certainly look at the top 10 contenders out of those 135 who are under the age of 80, he would be in the top 10. They also call him the Asian Pope Francis because he comes from a place known for its poverty. He's very humble. He's very likable as well. He probably wouldn't have the, let's say, intellectual capabilities of someone like Pope Benedict XVI, but he's a strong contender. But, okay. You know, the interesting thing is, while we may not see a pope from the African continent this time around, when you look at the top 10 countries right now today of people who practice their faith, like people who go to Mass on a Sunday and young men going into the seminary, women going for a religious life, those top 10 countries, most of them are in Africa and Asia. So even if it's not represented in the outcome of this conclave, you could be sure that in future conclaves, that's the way the global Catholic Church is shifting.
Colin Flynn, Vatican correspondent for EWTN. Thank you indeed for that update from Rome.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR
on News Talk.